Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
Constantine Winfrey could not have imagined the life that I now lead, but the work that they did that prepared their children and their children's children, trying to, you know, make do with the nothing that they had. And look at what they were able to do with nothing. What can I do with this?
Well, first time we've ever begun an hour with the voice of Oprah Winfrey. Why, you ask? Well, Harvard historian Henry Louis Gates has a new book and PBS special that traces Oprah's roots to help you trace your own. You may remember Gates's PBS series from last year, African American Lives, about using genealogy and the latest DNA technology to help mostly African Americans, not only, find out where they came from. In the case of African Americans, particularly if they were descendants of slaves who were brought from Africa, he used Oprah and others as examples at that time. Now he digs more deeply into Oprah Winfrey's past and more deeply into the intersection of history and science that it represents. The book is called Finding Oprah's Roots, Finding Your Own, published by Crown. The PBS special is Finding Oprah's Roots and airs tomorrow night at 8 o'clock locally on Channel 13. And Dr. Gates, so nice to see you again. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be back.
Why Oprah?
Well, I'm tempted to say, why do you think? The short answer is because Oprah Winfrey is sui generis. There's never been anyone like Oprah Winfrey. And I wanted to find out what made Oprah tick. How did a poor black child from Mississippi named Oprah Gail Winfrey become, quote unquote, Oprah, the richest black woman in history, one of the richest people in the world, and certainly one of the most recognizable personalities throughout the world? And but more importantly, as you said, last year for my African American Lives documentary, I picked 8 prominent African Americans as subjects for investigation into their genealogy, their family tree, and then their genetic history through their DNA, ascertaining their father's 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 line, their mother's 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 line. And you know what? Just by accident, we found more information about Oprah Winfrey's slave ancestry than we did any other subject. So she was, it was ideal in two ways. And Brian, frankly, I want people to watch the program. If I had picked an anonymous person, you know, I wouldn't be on the Brian Lehrer Show, no, would I?
Well, you might, but maybe you wouldn't be on all the other networks.
Yeah, right. I'd be on midnight on Brian Lehrer Show.
Well, you decide that Oprah is probably from a West African ethnic group known as the Kapele. Did I say that right?
It's the Pele. The K is silent. It's K-P-E-L-L-E, and they're from Liberia. If we did the DNA test, you know, Oprah very much identifies with the Zulu people, and she wanted to be Zulu. And so when the scientist did the test, his brother named Dr. Rick Kittles, now at the University of Chicago, and he called me, he said, Oprah ain't no Zulu. I said, do the test again, man. I said, make her Zulu. Oprah Winfrey's the most powerful black woman in the world. She's going to kill me. But we had 3 exact matches with the tribe from Zambia, the Bamileke people from the Cameroons, and the Kapele people from Liberia, and then one in on this side of the Atlantic with the Gullah people. And through historical extrapolation, we figured out, because her family shows up in Georgia, and then they migrated from her slave ancestors from Georgia down to Mississippi. And we know that, therefore, they came in through Charleston, South Carolina, and they had exact match with the Gullah people on the Georgia Sea Islands off the coast of South Carolina. So she had to be, of those choices, Kapele.
So here's a clip from your documentary of Oprah receiving that news.
I think I've been told that I was Zulu, and when I'm in Africa, I always feel that I, you know, I feel like I look Zulu. Mm-hmm. I feel that I'm, I feel connected to the Zulu tribe. If you're going to tell me I'm not Zulu, then it's going to be a big shot.
First thing I have to say, What?
Is that no African-American slaves came from South Africa.
None. So I'm not Zulu?
No, but you have a rich heritage. Okay, and now good. I'm about to take you to another part of Africa.
Okay.
All right. Now, they reveal that
we found... Okay, well, I have to live with that for a moment. I'm not Zulu.
You're not Zulu.
Okay.
How'd she take it?
She was very gracious and noble about it, but she was disappointed. I identify with the Yoruba people, Y-O-R-U-B-A. My daughters, Maggie, who's 27, and Liza, who's 25, both have Yoruba names. They have a Yoruba godparent, and they also have a Chui godparent, Anthony Appiah from Ghana, Wole Soyinka from Nigeria. I love the Yoruba people. I love the music. I like the mythology. I love the literature. I love the language. I even like the food except for okra. My father said I'm the only black man in the world that doesn't like okra, but I'm afraid that it must be my white heritage. But I have no Yoruba ancestry, and it's just what we have to live with. But what it proves, Brian, is that you could identify spiritually with anybody. You don't have to. I mean, if I wanted to write about Shakespeare and someone said, because I'm an African-American and I'm not primarily of Anglo-Saxon descent, we would agree that they were racist, right? Mm. I mean, if you wanted to identify with the Chinese people, the Ming Dynasty, right. You could.
Right. But there's a difference between drawing inspiration from anybody, as Oprah obviously draws inspiration from the Zulu in some ways, and tracing your roots and saying, I am genetically or genealogically a part of those peoples.
Absolutely. Yeah, the DNA doesn't lie. But the DNA has to be interpreted. And that's where context comes in. That's where we made a major innovation in the tracing of African ancestry by bringing together a small group of historians, experts on the African slave trade, to interpret the results. Because almost everyone gets multiple results. And you get multiple results because people migrated. And women were captured in wars. I'll give you an example. Let's say that the Igbo in eastern Nigeria and the Yoruba in western Nigeria had a war 500 years ago. And the Yoruba defeated the Igbo. What they did, they would take their women, you know, as the booty of war. So you would be raised as a Yoruba 500 years later. Somebody taps on your door and takes your DNA and you go, I'm a Yoruba. But you get your mitochondrial DNA through your mother. So really, genetically, you're an Igbo. Mm. You just don't know it.
Can you find out anything? Did you find out anything about individuals from whom Oprah would have been descended in Africa?
No.
Can't do
there
that.
There is no, it's impossible. I mean, Alex Haley thought that he did. Alex Haley was a man I admired, and he went to his grave believing that he had found the actual village and had this legacy of names. But
as documented in Roots.
Yeah, but let's just say very few historians believe that he actually did that. But it was one of the most important contributions to the pursuit of African-American genealogy. And he couldn't imagine it, but what became the tracing of DNA evidence was the impetus provided by Roots in 1977. So it was very important historically, but it probably didn't happen.
Henry Louis Gates, my guest on WNYC, author now of Finding Oprah's Roots, Finding Your Own, and producer of and host of the documentary Finding Oprah's Roots that will air on PBS tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. We can take your phone calls for him on Oprah, if you're curious, or how this relates to you at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. Put on your headphones,
yes, sir.
Dr. Gates, because we're going to take a call right now from Winnie in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Winnie.
Good morning, Brian. How are you this morning?
Okay, and you?
I'm fine. I just wanted to make a correction to a word that your guests pronounced. The tribe that Oprah is from.
Mm-hmm. It's the Pele.
It's a Pele tribe. It's
yes,
not the Pele.
I know. That's what I was saying. It's just easier for Americans to transliterate to see it, but the proper pronunciation. She's absolutely correct. The K is silent.
Right.
It's K-P-E-L-L-E.
I'm the one who – I have to take my personal responsibility here, Winnie. I'm the one who mispronounced it, and okay. Dr. Gates corrected me. Now you corrected me.
Okay.
Are you from Liberia?
Yes, I am.
Ah, that's great. Well, are you an Americo-Liberian, as they used
no,
to say?
No, I'm not an Americo-Liberian. I'm a how should I put it?
A Pele?
Indigenous Liberian.
What people?
I'm from the Bassa tribe.
Ah, that's great.
Yeah, it's from Grand Bassa County.
Well, I hope Oprah goes to Liberia.
I hope she does.
I said to her that the Pele people are the luckiest people in the world.
Well, she's been there already, right?
During the
inauguration for President Ellen Sirleaf, she was there.
Oh, she was? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she did go.
Winnie, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
James in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Oh, yes, hi. As Dr. Gates is probably aware, I've seen him on the PBS series. It was really fantastic.
Thank you.
All this is based on this work of Cavalli-Sforza from the 1950s, the Italian geneticist. And the ultimate picture that comes out of this is the fact that we are all Africans. I mean,
that's
I'm
right.
Italian-American, but I know where my origins are as a human being.
Right, 90,000 years ago.
In Africa.
Yeah, we all came from Ethiopia.
We all did. We all did.
But some of us are more recent Africans than others.
Well, that's the point I wanted to make, though. Much of the conflict in the world today is this line drawing.
Mm-hmm.
If you draw a line in 1700, then you're, I don't know, Irish Catholic or Irish Protestant. If you draw a line in 1200, then you're a different kind of Irish.
That's right.
If you draw a line in 500, you're not even Irish. You're maybe, I don't know what they were, Celts or something. Mm-hmm. And if we all draw the lines too recently, we're likely to get caught up in the differences rather than the similarities.
Right. That's absolutely the case. But those differences are important. You know, Freud called nationalism the narcissism of tiny differences, and you're absolutely correct. But these tiny differences we use to mask economic competition. You see, to me, all of this so-called ethnic tension is really about who's going to get the slice of the bacon. Who's going to get the pie?
Why does anybody in Iraq today care if you're Sunni or Shia? That's why.
It's about the land. It's about the bread. About the oil. That's what it's about.
James, thank you. You know, when you were on here last year to talk about African-American lives, you emphasized how mixed race you discovered that so many people are, including yourself.
Right.
And you seem to celebrate the fact, along the lines of what James was saying, because it ties many of us closer together.
Absolutely.
But we also got a few emails after you left asking, wasn't racial mixing in the slavery era largely a matter of rape of black women by white men? How much was that the case?
Oh, it was. It's true. It's quite a lot of it was the objectification of African American women by white men and their sexual exploitation of them. But on the other hand, the biggest surprise in the series to me was not that Oprah was a Pelley. It was that I am descended from a white woman on my mother's side. Now that is amazing, and that means that there was a white woman who slept with a black man and bore his child between 1619 and 1750. Now, we know this, Brian, because the Mormons who did our genealogical work found three of my fourth great grandmothers and grandfathers on my mother's side, back to people born in 1750. They were mixed. They were free Negroes. One fought, John Redmond, my fourth great grandfather, fought in the American Revolution. In fact, I was this summer, my brother and I were inducted into the Sons of the American Revolution, which is like you could have knocked me over with a feather. But my mitochondrial DNA, again, which you get from your mother's mother's mother, goes back to that African kingdom called Northern Europe. In fact, when they showed me on the map, I'm looking at this map of Africa and there's like nothing there, no hits, one little tiny dot at the mouth of the Nile River. And the map of Europe looked like it had smallpox. And I even had two exact matches with women who are Ashkenazi Jews. So, you know, shalom aleichem, brother.
Yeah, Dr. Henry Louis Gates, Swede. So how does this make you feel?
Well, it made me worry about getting my reparation check, man. I mean, when I did the admixture test, I got 50% African and 50% European. Now, I knew my father's very light complexion, he could pass, but I had no idea that I had so much European ancestry. It made me intrigued. I've always known that I was descended from an Irishman and a black woman on my father's side. But now to know that I'm descended from a woman from Germany or Poland, that region, who mated with a black man, an African, who was a former slave, makes my past infinitely more interesting to me.
Henry Louis Gates, we'll continue with him in a minute. Take more of your phone calls and emails. His newest book, Finding Oprah's Roots, Finding Your Own. And we'll talk more about finding your own roots and how you can apply this DNA technology and genealogical knowledge to your own search. The new PBS special featuring him and produced by him is called Finding Oprah's Roots, and it airs tomorrow night at 8. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.
For me,
mean personally, and I think for us as a people, I think we owe them a resurrection.
Oprah Winfrey, as you will hear tomorrow night in Finding Oprah's Roots, tomorrow night at 8 on PBS, and Dr. Henry Louis Gates, who produced and hosts that show, is also the author now of Finding Oprah's Roots, Finding Your Own. And let's talk about the Finding Your Own piece of this. It's fascinating to hear about this intersection of the latest DNA technology and genealogical research. But you've got certain resources. Oprah Winfrey certainly has certain resources. How does the ordinary listener to this show go about trying to use DNA and genealogy to trace their roots, African or otherwise?
Great question. That's why I wrote the book. The subtitle, which Oprah picked, by the way, Finding Oprah's Roots, Finding Your Own. People thought that we were magicians. And I know because the response to the series was so overwhelming. 11 million people watched All or Part of African American Lives a year ago. It's like broke records at PBS for a black documentary. And when I walk down the street here in Chelsea where I have an apartment, or I check into a hotel, or I'm at airports all the time, someone takes my baggage. A lot of these people are African American. They'll go, "Thank you, brother. I love the series." So I know that we reached all these just sort of average, regular people, and they want to know, how can I do it? Or they think that they can't do it. So I wrote this book. You start in your living room. You start in your kitchen. You sit down and ask your mother and your father where and when they were born, and then who their parents were and where and when they were born. And then you go to the censuses. All the censuses are on the internet. Or you can go to get the original census at a major library like the New York Public Library, you know, a microfilm of it or some kind of duplication. And that's how you start. And you go every 10 years backwards till 1870. In fact, Brian, I think that we could revolutionize the way we teach African-American history and science, or history in general, into inner-city black kids by using a genealogical and genetic approach. And what do I mean? Well, if I walked into inner-city high school today and I said, today's lesson is the history of DNA. There was a guy named Watson, a guy named Crick, and they discovered the double helix. People would say, get out of town, man. We want to listen to some hip-hop. But if I say, you see this cotton swab, and you scrape your cheek 20 times, I'm going, in 6 weeks, I'll be able to tell you where your maternal tribal ancestor came from in Africa. And in the meantime, we're going to learn how the science works. Mm. Or if I say, I want you to go to the archives, the dusty, boring, dark, dank archives, and do historical research on slavery, they'll go, no way. But if I say, you go home and talk to your mama, I'm going to give you a blank family tree. We're going to take you all the way back to 1870. And then we're going to go backwards from 1870 through the sound barrier into slavery. And I'm going to walk you through, and we're going to look at each census. And we're going to look at property tax records and estate division records. Who wouldn't be interested in that? Because it's about you. Nothing is more important than you are. Nothing is more riveting than oneself. You can turn any subject into a fascinating area of inquiry by personalizing it, and that's what genealogy and genetics do.
And one particular tip I'll pass along from your book, you mentioned that the website genealogy.com, mm-hmm. though you have to pay for it.
Right, ancestry.com.
I'm sorry, you're mm-hmm. right. Ancestry.com has an incredible wealth of census data and other things that individuals can use to trace their families.
Right, and the DNA test, the cheapest one is $99. I think Dr. Rick Kittles, who does AfricanAncestry.com, that's the main source for the African tribal identity. It's about $200-$300, but people pay a couple hundred dollars for Nike sometimes. You know, well, I mean, we have to get our priorities straight.
Right. Would there be other reasons to use that service other than trying to trace yourself back to an African tribe?
Well, African ancestry kind of in the name gives it away. But there are other ones called Family Tree DNA or RootsForReal.com. Both of them are quite, or Print Genomics does the DNA, PrintGenomicsDNA.com does the admixture test that tells you percentage of European, African, Asian, and Native American ancestry.
Just by those broad categories?
Yeah, those four broad categories for the admixture test. The others will tell you where your father's line goes and your mother's line goes. And, you know, you're in for some surprises like I was. I had no idea I was descended from a white woman. You can shut my mouth wide open, as we say.
Melvin in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Henry Louis Gates.
Oh, okay, I'll have to cut off my...
Yeah, turn off the radio.
Okay. Yes, hi. I'm a member of the African American Genealogy Society here in New York City.
Oh, that's marvelous.
Yes, and the thing about what I would like all listeners to know is the fact that right here in New York, we have the National Archives, which are right down on Varick Street, right there at Varick, and where it meets Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And it is amazing, the records that the United States has kept on everybody and everything. Of course, the census is closed for 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can go and you can access the census for 1930. But the thing, and not only that, but even it has... basically anything that you want to know about your parents or things, you can eat. That is a good starting point. Also,
right.
there are genealogical societies all over the United States. And people who come into us, they're very interested, and it is really very, very revealing.
Well, Melvin, why don't you tell people how to contact you?
I could give that to Brian because I have to run over and get the thing because we meet every
Or if
second.
You have a website or
Pardon?
A website
or a public phone number, you could give it out if you want.
I don't have the book right here with me. It's
okay,
right
that's all right.
On my desk.
But it's the African American
Genealogical
Society.
It's one of the largest and one of the most excellent genealogical societies. And we feature an African American genealogist named Tony Burroughs, and I'm sure Melvin's familiar with Tony Burroughs' work from Chicago. Genealogy has never been bigger, Brian, and it's interesting to ask why. And I think it's because people are afloat. People want anchoring. People want to be to find a foundation through their own family tree. I keep my family tree in the kitchen of my house in Cambridge, and I have it framed. So every day when I make coffee, I look at my ancestors going back to 1750, all my African-American ancestors. And it's great. It's very comforting to me. And I keep my DNA, the map of where my exact matches for my mitochondrial DNA are, right under that. And I find it very comforting. My kids think it's, like, boring.
Right near your diploma.
Yeah, right.
Melvin, thanks for your call. And we looked up, my producer turned on a dime, as usual, and looked up the website address for the African American Historical Genealogical Society, and it is aahgs.org.
Oh, great, thanks.
aahgs.org.
And Brian, guess what we're doing? We're doing a sequel, African American Lives 2, which we hope to air next February. And we are going to advertise for an average African American family. I mean, we're going to include Tina Turner, Maya Angelou, Beyonce, Tom Joyner, Morgan Freeman. But we're going to do a national competition to get a regular African-American family, and we're going to do their family tree, and we're going to do their DNA. So it should be quite exciting.
So now you got a lot of the audience asking, how do I apply?
You can... you can
do I have to go and be judged by Simon Cowell, or what?
No. It'll be a team of Henry Louis Gates and Peter Coonhart and Dylan McGee, the executive producers. But we will post that information. We're setting up a special website, because if I gave out my email address, it would be flooded today, and I'm not willing to do
All
that.
All right. When you set it up, let us know, and we'll pass it along, because so many
okay.
people in New York would be interested. Henry Louis Gates, my guest on WNYC. His new book, Finding Oprah's Roots, Finding Your Own, published by Crown. The PBS special that he produced and hosted airs tomorrow night called Finding Oprah's Roots. That's tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on Channel 13. Coming up in 10 minutes, by the way, Barack Obama takes a swipe at baby boomers. We will read what he said and take reaction from callers in all generations. That's coming up in 10 minutes. John in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, John.
I'd just like to make a comment on the relevancy of this, because it's the genetic aspect of, you know, of the argument basically started in Nazi Germany with eugenics and separating people based on genetics. We have enough divisions among people. I think now even among African Americans, there's differences amongst each other, where it's not necessary. Like now we're creating new tribes when it's more important that we look at the present and we look towards the future, as opposed as all being human beings and not being separate from each other.
So let me take the Nazi and eugenics thing out of it for a minute. You're saying why focus on our pasts at all? Why focus on, you know, the tiny different ethnic groups that we may come from, rather than looking to the future? Why dwell in the past and come up with all these identities that can divide us instead of looking at what we have in common going forward.
Sure, and I can give you a short answer to that. The reason that African Americans are obsessed with finding this information, Brian, is that it was systematically denied to us. We didn't have access to it. You can't say, go ahead and forget that. Forget your African past, because, you know, nobody, they stole our names. They stole our language. They stole our culture. We want to know. Now, if I walked around with, like I was some kind of, if Oprah would declare that she was only going to talk to Pele people or became some Pele nationalist, I mean, that would be the dangers of this kind of thing, but that doesn't happen. In fact, the admixture test to the person whose concern was so voiced so eloquently, the admixture test shows that we're all mixed up. There's no one who's pure. I mean, we all have a little African, a little European, a little Native American, and a little Asian to various degrees. And that is a healthy thing. It's a good thing. There's nothing. Look, we can't. You can say that I'm a human being, but if I go out here right now and try to get a taxi to go uptown and Brian's cross street, statistically, Brian's going to get that taxi more quickly than I, because I am a visibly an African American. And Brian, you might have a little African-American in you, brother, but it's not so visible.
Haven't found it yet.
Yeah, right.
Haven't found it yet.
And that's the way, that's reality. You can't say that these, the pressures of ethnic difference don't matter. They exist. And if I walk into a room, people go, look at that black man. They also say, look at that black man on a crutch right now. But, you know, one day these differences will not be important, but they are important now. And I get defined by the larger society, by the fact of my African heritage, and I want to know about it. And I want to know, and I have a right to know about it. And every African-American has a right to know about it. But I am the first person to say, don't fetishize it. Don't make a way of life out of it. Don't use it to beat other people up, like in Serbia or Croatia or in among the Sunnis and the Shiites or whatever ethnic tension around the world that you want to embrace.
You wrote that you wanted to know where Oprah got her uncanny sense of the zeitgeist.
That's
how she
right.
seems to know what average people are thinking just by waking up in the morning. Do you think this pursuit of her ancestry has given you any insight into that, or is it largely irrelevant?
No, I think that there are two motifs that, first of all, it's very important for me to say this. Your culture, your personality traits are not biological, okay? They are not transmitted through the DNA, but they are through mother's milk. They are through environment. You know, you are, I'm sure if I could interview your parents or your grandparents, I'd know, I'd say, God, that's where he gets that from. The gift of gab, for example, your insight, you know, your capacity for language. Oprah, two leitmotifs which recur from 1870 down to the present. One is the value of education, and one is the quest to own property. Starting in 1870, her first slave ancestor that we can identify, her great-great-grandfather, Constantine Winfrey, but was able within 6 years, 6 years following 1870, 1876, was able to bargain with a white man and exchanged 8 bales of cotton, which weighed 3,200 pounds, clean, which means he had to pick 7,000 pounds of cotton, for 80 acres of prime land in Mississippi. And we know that he was successful.
So there's a little bit of her business acumen, maybe.
The guy was a genius. And you could look in every history book, Brian, ever written about the black experience, and there's only one story about a black man who exchanges 8 bales of cotton for 80 acres of land anywhere in the South, and that is Oprah Winfrey's great-grandfather. Now, go figure.
And here's another clip of her from the documentary where she finds out that her, is it great-great-grandmother on
Amanda,
her mother's side?
Amanda Winters.
Built a school for black children, and she reflects about how important education is for her.
I think that's so extraordinary. It feels like it's unimaginable to me because I feel so deeply in a way that I cannot even articulate through words that it is that education is freedom. Like it's the open door.
It is.
And now I'm going to build schools for other girls. So that's really, that's extraordinary.
And you're doing it. You were reenacting what she did.
That's right.
And also her great-great-grandfather on her father's side, if I have that right, also built a school on his land, which he...
That's right. That's Constantine. The same man who bargained for the 80 acres. In 1910, the white community is shutting down the colored school. So what does he do? This is in Poplar Creek, Mississippi. He moves the school onto his 80 acres of land. That's Oprah's great-great-grandfather.
Was it as a result of this genealogical exploration with you that she decided to open that school for girls in South Africa?
No, it was already in the works. We just filmed her a year ago, and that school's been in the works for 5 years.
So it must have blown her away to find those connections.
It blew her away. She cries on camera. And I went. She was gracious enough to invite me to attend the opening of her school. And I have no idea why people have questioned the opening of this school. Nobody questions the opening of Eton or Exeter, two of the finest private schools in the world. She wanted to build a black Eton or Exeter for poor black girls and colored girls and white girls on the African continent. Nobody says to Harvard, where I teach, why don't you divide up your $30 billion endowment and divide it among 50 community colleges? It's ridiculous. You know, we need great centers of education, and Oprah Winfrey is the only philanthropist in history with the imagination to create a school that will rival the finest private schools in the world.
But she said a controversial thing, if the press accounts that I read are accurate. When asked why she wasn't doing this in the United States, she said something about, you know, there not being the enthusiasm for learning in this country that she finds in South Africa.
Well, to some extent that's true. I mean, there's a hunger for education among the poorest segment in throughout Africa, the poorest social segment of the community throughout Africa, that was common among our people, the African American people, in up to the 50s and the 60s. Something terrible happened to our people in the late 1960s, and our community segmented into a self-perpetuating middle and upper middle class and a self-perpetuating underclass. And I remember the results of a poll in the Washington Post a few years ago. Inner city black kids in Washington list things white: speaking standard English, getting straight A's in school, visiting the Smithsonian. I was born in 1950. If anyone had said that when we were growing up, they'd have smacked you upside your head and then checked you into an insane asylum. Education, education, education. Get all the education you can. The blackest thing you could be when we were growing up was an educated man or woman. It was being Thurgood Marshall or Dr. King or Mary McLeod Bethune or a doctor or lawyer.
So how did the civil rights movement lead to this?
I don't know. I think it was because affirmative action, which has been wonderfully successful. It's the reason I'm here is because of affirmative action. That's why I got into Yale in the late 1960s. It segmented the community. You see, under segregation, ironically, we all lived in the same neighborhoods. This is not an original argument with me. I'm just repeating what's commonly known among scholars, William Julius Wilson's work particularly. Now, the black middle class lives with other white middle class people in the suburbs, leaving poor people to live all by themselves, the self-perpetuating forms of behavior, which are unfavorable, unattractive, and the role models, the lack of role models. And I think that we have to reform the public schools. Our public schools are a disaster. I gave a Black History Month talk at a public school in Boston a couple years ago, and it was a school assembly. And I told the teacher I had to go to the men's room, the boys' room, whatever you call it in high school. And she said, well, just a minute. And she made a phone call, and I waited. I said, you don't understand. I have to go to the bathroom. And she said, you can't go to the bathroom, Dr. Gates, without a policeman. You know, you're thinking, what are you talking about? You know, I just want to go to the toilet. So something terrible has happened to our people. Oprah's right. We need a revolution, a moral revolution within the African-American community. And I think that genealogy and genetics can contribute to
it. But as you describe it, as William Julius Wilson described it on the show very recently, it takes more than reforming the public schools, because you can, you know, distribute teachers any way you want and, you know, all this stuff. But it sounds like there needs to be more fundamental reform, including in the way people are distributed and where they live.
Oh, absolutely. Ben Wilson is much more articulate than anyone else in the country about that because of this self-reinforcing behavior.
Last thing, and it's a complete digression, mm-hmm. but I have to ask you, because I've been listening to a lot of James Brown lately, and you also wrote about James Brown what you wrote about Oprah.
That's right.
Waking up in the morning. And you must have written this just somewhat before he died.
Yes, I did. I tried to go to to James Brown's 70th birthday party at the Apollo. My favorite album of all time is Live at the Apollo Volume 1, which is 1962. I know all the words. I could sing it right now. I know the all 9 minutes of Lost Someone, man, on both sides of the album. And I tried to go up to the funeral when he was lying in state at the Apollo, and I couldn't get in. They wouldn't let me in. I was on my way to South Africa with
they didn't let you into James Brown's funeral?
There were like 50,000 people in front of me. You know, I tried to cut ahead. The line of police almost, you know, shouted in my ear and told me to get the hell out of town.
You got to call ahead, man. This is Henry Louis Gates.
Yeah, right. I've tried to get Al Sharpton, but he wasn't answering his cell phone.
But what was the thing?
James could touch the zeitgeist, man. James Brown would, he just like Oprah, Oprah like James Brown, I should say. Whatever he felt was where the average African-American was, whether it was Please Please or Lost Someone or Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. That's a gift. That's a gift. That's a sign of genius. And James was the man. And I'm so glad I read in the paper yesterday that his kids are going to build a house's body, as it were, in the mausoleum and turn his estate into a Graceland, kind of a black Graceland.
Where's that going to be? Atlanta?
I don't know. I think that they're trying to decide.
Yeah.
I think they have James on ice trying to figure this out. But I will make a pilgrimage because I love James. But my only regret is that he didn't live long enough that Harvard University could give him an honorary doctor. Of course, they had no plans to do that. But I wanted to nominate him and try to persuade my colleagues to turn the Godfather's soul into a Harvard man.
As long as it's not the way they had Ted Williams on ice.
But
on that, we're going to leave it. Finding Oprah's Roots, Finding Your Own is the new book by Henry Louis Gates, Harvard historian and African-American studies professor. It's published by Crown. The related PBS special airs tomorrow night at 8. Always great to see you. Thank you very
much. Thanks,
Brian. Brian Lehrer and WNYC. In a minute, Barack Obama said about baby boomers and your reactions from all generations. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.